Bandwidth for the Tech Guy on KFI Podcast is brought to you by DSL Extreme at DSLExtreme.com. Hi, this is Leo, and this is my KFI Podcast. This show originally aired on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles on Saturday, June 10th, 2006. This is show 255.
June 10th, 2006.
KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 11:06, I'm Deborah Mark, KFI News.
Thank you, Deborah. And a good morning to you, Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. That's how to talk high tech today, shall we? From now till 2 o'clock, 1-800-520-1KFI. That's my phone number, 1-800-520-1534. Anything having to do with tech, we can talk about. And certainly, there's a lot to talk about this week. And as I mentioned with Bill, we'll talk about these new high-speed networks that the cell phone folks are offering. But now I see that the telcos are hoping to offer television service, and they just got a little support on Friday from the House of Representatives. Actually, I guess it was Thursday. The House approved a bill that would make it easier for companies like AT&T and Verizon to offer subscription television service. The bill allows companies to apply for a nationwide office or a license instead of going to each city individually. Now, that's currently how the cable companies have to do it. I don't know if you know this, but in order to get a cable franchise, you actually have to go to each municipality and say, we would like to be the cable company in your town. And the municipality has to do a long, involved approval process, and it's very costly for the cable companies. Phone companies don't want to have to go through that. So they went to Congress and they got a bill. I don't know what exactly the plan is. My buddy John C. Dvorak, who seems to have an inside track on a lot of this stuff, says, no, this is just a ruse. This is just a little kind of saber rattling, because what's really going to happen is the phone companies are deathly afraid of competition from the cable companies. Of course, the cable companies with this bill probably are a little afraid that the telcos might move into their territory. And many agree, or at least think, there's no evidence of this because it would all be behind closed doors and would be highly illegal, but many believe that the phone companies and the cable companies are colluding, they're getting together, and the phone companies are saying to the cable companies, look, you stay out of the phone business and we'll stay out of the TV business. We'll let you be, you know, the TV company, the cable company. And I guess they'll compete over internet because they're doing that. And maybe that's what the lesson learned is, oh, man, the prices are we have to keep dropping prices because of the competition. Let's not compete over the phone business. Let's not compete over the television business. I'm not sure I agree with John and others who think that. I think that these companies have shown that they're willing to compete and want to compete. And I hope they do, because it's very good for us as consumers. If you can right now, you know, if the cable company's it. I guess you get there's satellite and there's cable. And to get a third party in there, like the phone company also offering television service, is a great thing. Phone companies wanted to do this for a long time. In fact, the DSL lines that we get now, the high-speed internet lines we get from the phone company, were originally designed not to bring you internet. They were designed before the internet really was something consumers wanted. They were designed to give you something called video dial tone, the ability to play TV, to become a cable company. Now, it would be, I think, somewhat more limited. I don't think they'd have the bandwidth, quite the bandwidth the cable company has. They've got a big fat pipe into your house. Phone companies, copper into your house is not quite so big. Although, when you look at companies like Verizon and what they're doing, putting fiber into your home, that would be a fatter pipe than the cable company has. They'd be able to put far more content into your house that way. It's probably why Verizon's doing it. So here it comes, and I think it's a good thing. Competition from the phone company for the cable company. Well, enough of them. The cable company's got a pretty good monopoly, and I'd sure like to see the cable company competing with the phone company on phone service. They're doing it now. I mean, Comcast does it. I think Adelphia does it, where you can get local phone service from the cable company. That's great. That means prices go down. Look how much lower. Remember how long distance used to cost a lot? making a, you used to get off long distance call. Now, see, maybe you younger people don't remember this, but you used to get a long distance call. You go, I can't talk. It's just costing me a packet. Now you pay $20 a month for unlimited long distance. And most cell phones have unlimited long distance. And why is that? Deregulation, competition. When you could only get long distance from AT&T, they could charge you whatever they want. So I'm glad to see this kind of competition. I think this is a good thing. I am saddened because one of the amendments to this bill was tossed out, the net neutrality amendment. And I was actually very much in favor of that. And this would be a sensible bill to put it into. You know, okay, we'll give you this ability to apply for subscription television service nationwide. But we also want to guarantee that you will not seek payments from content providers like Google for access to your subscribers. That's this net neutrality issue. We talked about it before. The phone companies, Verizon in particular, they've been really saber-rattling, saying companies like Google are piggybacking on our bandwidth, and they're using all this bandwidth. I'm sure YouTube, same thing. They're using all this bandwidth. We don't like it. We want them to have to pay extra for access to our subscribers, or at least decent access to our subscribers. In fact, it happened recently that a cable company was blocking traffic from Craigslist to the Craigslist website. Now, the whole ground of being of the internet is that all bits are created equal. That it, you know, when you're surfing the net, it doesn't matter what kind of content you're getting, whether it's a song from iTunes, a video from YouTube, a website, it's all the same. Bits is bits. And you're paying for those bits. You're paying a flat fee, but you're paying the fee. It's not like you're not paying for the access to the internet. They're getting paid already for them to double dip. It's either greed or it's anti-competitive. They want to kind of keep these people who are like, well, I'll give you an example. If you're a DSL provider, if you're a phone company providing high-speed internet, you don't want your customers going to Vonage and using voice over internet and killing, you know, getting rid of your phone service, but keeping your high-speed internet so that they can use Vonage. So what do? Well, you say, well, if you want voice over internet that works, your provider is going to have to pay us. We want a cut. They'd go to Vonage and say, hey, if you want to use our network for voice over internet, you'd be giving us some of that profit because you're killing our business. So these net neutrality bills are an attempt to prevent this from happening. Unfortunately, it was defeated. There are a number of sites on both sides of this matter. There's one called SaveTheInternet.com that is pro-net neutrality. But there are other sites that are sponsored, frankly, by the phone companies. They don't say it, but they are. And those sites are trying to say, net neutrality, bad idea. Let the market control this. Problem is, the market really may not be able to control it if you have these big providers who are, in many cases, the only game in town. You get people like Tim Berners-Lee, the man who invented the World Wide Web, Vint Cerf, the father of the internet, coming out saying, no, this is not what we invented. We invented a democratic internet where a bit is a bit, and some bits aren't better than others. To do so would really change the way the internet works, and it's not a good idea. Well, unfortunately, at least one attempt in the House has failed, but proponents of net neutrality now are going to the Senate to fight on this. They think they have a better chance of passing such a bill in the Senate. We'll continue to follow it. Microsoft has a new plan for computers in emerging nations, third world nations. They want to sell computers as cell phones are sold now. Heavily subsidized, very inexpensive computers. But you buy the minutes to use those computers. I don't mean online minutes. I mean to use them. You subscribe, you get little scratch-off cards with 20 minutes, 30 minutes. So anybody can own a computer, and you just basically pay as you go. They call this FlexGo. I know it's kind of hard to believe, but they actually call it... This is a plan that Microsoft's come up with. It's their response kind of to the $100 computer that MIT is proposing. Both are aimed at trying to get computing power into the third world, where it could very much make a difference. I don't know if I think much of this idea. FlexGo, Microsoft's calling it. But at least they're trying. We were talking about putting TV on your cell phone. I mean, the idea now is to really put TV everywhere, including, of course, your video iPod. CBS now has joined the other major networks in putting shows on iTunes. You can get Survivor and CSI on iTunes. Download it, put it on your iPod. So now ABC, NBC, Fox all have primetime shows on iTunes. And I have to say, I was among many who said, nobody's going to want to watch a video, a television show on that little iPod screen. Steve Jobs even said it. Of course, it must have been disinformation because he said it shortly before they released the product. But I guess both Steve Jobs and I were wrong, because Apple has now sold more than 30 million videos since October in 8 months. People are obviously doing it. And enough so that all the networks are participating. Now, it could be an experiment from them. And all the cell carriers are offering this kind of stuff. If their networks can support it, Verizon got VCast, where you can, because they have a very high-speed EVDO network, you can watch video. And the networks that are producing news shows, 5-minute news shows, specifically for cell phone. Everybody wins with this. We get what we want, where we want it, and the companies get a new audience. I'll tell you, it's all because we have these high-speed wireless networks. We can talk about all of those things, or your question or comment or suggestion in the market for technology. It doesn't have to be computers, cell phones, PDAs, camcorders, home theater, MP3 players. We will talk about it. 1-800-520-1KFI. I'm going to go to the phones in just a bit. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
KFI News.
Fox News.
Together, bringing you the big stories.
KFI AM 640.
1124. KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Let's head right to the phones. Lots of calls. And starting off with Julian in Aliso Viejo. Hello, Julian. Welcome to KFI.
Well, thank you, Leo. Hey, I hope you can help me. I'm suffering from upgrade indecision. I need your help.
I talk to a lot of indecisive people. I don't blame you. It's paralyzing the way the computer industry changes.
It is.
So
fast. I thought I was not one of those indecisive people. I thought I'd pretty much decided on a brand new Dell XPS 700 system mm-hmm. with a 3 gigahertz dual core processor.
Right.
And then somebody messed up my thought processes and told me about the new Conroe E6700 processor.
Yeah.
That's due out July 23rd.
I like the Conroe.
So now, you do?
Yeah.
It seems to be the good thing.
Yeah.
So should I wait?
That's always an interesting question. What do you have now? I mean, how are you doing now? Are you suffering or?
Yeah, I'm suffering. I have a Dell laptop, Inspiron 8000, with a Pentium 3 800 megahertz computer.
So you have a laptop and you're looking to go to a desktop?
Yes.
Yeah. Of course, anything that you get is going to be a lot faster than what you've got right now.
Right.
The question is the Conroe worth waiting for? And of course, the Conroes will cost more.
Yes.
So let me, talk a little bit about what the Conroe is. Now, there's also some question about whether they really will get it out when they do. So you say you're hearing July.
Yeah, I've read on the internet that July 23rd is the date for the release.
Yeah, that's when Intel ships to the integrators.
Ah, so it could be quite.
It takes at least a month before you're going to see a computer. So we're now talking August.
Okay. And then I imagine they've got to work out all the bugs in the new computers.
You will be using a new chipset, and the chip is probably pretty solid, but the chipset is where you can get into some trouble.
Okay.
And it's another Core Duo. You understand? It's just a little bit more advanced. I think that, as I remember, and I'm gonna have to look up the specs on this. They have more L2 cache.
Right.
Things like that, which does, by the way, make a big difference in performance. Where I go, and I'm going to go right now, when I'm looking at reviews of chipsets, is AnandTech, AnandTech. The problem is, I don't think they even have a Conroe yet.
Okay,
so
I read on one website, and I don't remember the URL, but they were talking about it, and they've actually overclocked it to about 4.5 gigahertz.
Right.
A 2 gigahertz processor.
Right.
And just say it's amazing.
Yeah. Now, are you an overclocker? Is that the kind of thing you like to do?
No, I'm not. I used to be a tech guy, but not anymore.
I don't. You know, I think chips are so fast now that I don't really recommend overclocking anymore. I think overclocking now is more just for the glory of it than really for the need of it. When you have, you know, back when we were using processors that were 600 megahertz and you could get it to a 1 point, you know, one gigahertz or more by running it faster than it was spec'd, that, you know, that was pretty cool. That was pretty great. But now when you've got processors running at 2 and 3 gigahertz and you're trying to get more performance out of them, the issues of cooling become really significant. And it ends up being, I think, more expensive in many cases to overclock than it is just to buy a stock part and run it at the normal speed, the nominal speed. So the people who do this are really focused on bragging rights more than they are on actual performance. So the Conroe may be highly overclockable, but if you're not going to overclock it, that's not really an issue for you.
Right.
What are you doing? I mean, one of the advantages Conroe will have is in encoding video, for instance.
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I do a lot of photography, so I like using Photoshop. I use a Canon SLR,
right.
Shooting in RAW, so I have to do a lot of processing power for that. Burning DVDs, with that kind of with photography, backing up my photographs and stuff like
that.
Yeah,
I think the Core Duo is going to be fine for you. It's a very fast part. I don't think you're going to see. I don't think you're going to have Conroe envy. Let's put it that way.
Okay. And have you heard any good or bad things about the XPS 700?
No. The great. As far as I know, it's very good.
Excellent.
Yeah, I haven't heard any bad things about it. Dell makes great hardware, and you do have the advantage now of you're buying a chip that's been out for 6 months. It's well understood, unlike the Conroe.
Right.
And so that's always the risk when you buy something the latest greatest. Well, it does give you a longer life, but you're also taking the risk of being somebody trying something new. And whenever you see a new chipset, that makes me nervous. I think for you, given what you're doing, you're not going to see much benefit from going to the Conroe. And I think you'll be very happy with the Core Duo.
Excellent. Well, then you can count on you, Leo.
Thanks, Julian. I hope I helped to cut through the indecision. 11:29, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Deborah Marks in the KFI News Center.
Nighttime is the right time for John Ziegler. Monday night, 7 to 10. KFI, AM 640.
11:37, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Reminder, I'm going to be doing the radio show next Saturday from Bel Air Camera. We're going to have a great time, and I really want you to come out and say hi. It's in Westwood on Kinross. Bel Air Camera has been around for a long time, 50 years. I know you know the name. They've gone all digital, and maybe not all digital, but they've really focused on digital, and they're very knowledgeable. We're going to do the show there day before Father's Day. That's a week from today, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. I hope you'll come by. Also want you to stick around because I'll do a special question and answer session. We'll talk about digital cameras, what kind to get, point and shoot versus SLR and so forth. I'll bring some of my cameras to show you how I use them. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to spend the whole day there, so June 17th, this Saturday, log on to KFIAM640.com for more information. So let me, we kind of rushed through a little bit with Julian, our last caller, and it is very confusing, the Intel nomenclature and which chips you're getting and so forth. So let me kind of step back and explain a little bit so you can understand, because it is confusing. And really the bottom line is that today's chips and today's computers are so fast that even a significant improvement in performance may not make much of a difference in your computing. Unless you're doing things that are particularly demanding, gaming, video coding, encoding, transcoding, ripping MP3s, even that's not particularly challenging these days, unless you're doing something right now with a fast machine that seems slow, you're not going to see a big benefit. Word processing, spreadsheets, internet surfing, burning DVDs, even things like video editing aren't going to be that much faster. So the current state of the art is the Pentium D, which is a dual core chip. When I say dual core, we're talking about having two processors on one chip. It's very fast, but it's not twice as fast, and it's fast in only certain circumstances. So what happened was Intel thought, well, we'll get to 4 gigahertz processors, and they found out that they hit a wall. AMD's hit the same wall. You cannot make these processors that fast. They get too hot. There's too much noise. They just don't work. So they hit the wall on in terms of what they call clock speed. Now, the clock speed, it impacts how fast the processor does work. So what do we do? How do we improve the performance of computers? Well, frankly, one way to do it, and a very good way, is to improve the performance of everything around the processor. You've got processors so fast now that they're waiting for the memory, the RAM. They're waiting for the hard drive. They're waiting for the video card. They're plenty fast. Everything else is keeping them down. So one way to speed up your system is to get faster memory, to get faster hard drives, better video cards. That's going to make a bigger difference in many cases. But of course, Intel sells chips. They want to make faster chips, so you'll buy new equipment. So if we can't make a faster clock speed, well what if we put two chips in one? Now, here's the problem. Most programs don't need two brains at a time, can't work with two brains at a time, so won't see any benefit. The ability to use two brains, two chips at a time is called threading. It's like multitasking. So let's say you're using a threaded program, Adobe Photoshop. Most of the time, you know, it's chugging along. It's not really using much processor power, but every once in a while you'll do a filter in Photoshop, a blur, for instance, that really takes some processing power. Well, Photoshop's smart enough to say, I'm going to divide this. I see I have two processors. I'm going to divide this task in half. I'm going to let one processor do half of it, the other processor do the other half, and at the end we'll combine the results. It'll happen twice as fast. That's called threading, a threaded process. Multitasking. But most programs don't do that. You know, your word processor is not going to be twice as fast. I don't even know what it would look like if it were twice as fast. Your browser isn't threaded. Most programs are not threaded. Now, the operating system is. And that's where you'll see, that's probably for most of us, that's where we'll see the benefit, where we're doing more than one thing at a time. In the past, if you were burning a CD and surfing the internet, the single chip in your computer would have to split its time and say, okay, let me display the page. Okay, let me burn some more. Let me display the page. And it's going to be slower. Well, now we've got two chips. One of them can be burning the CD while the other one is browsing the net. And that's where you see performance increases. So you get the benefit of a dual-core processor only in cases where you're doing more than one thing at a time. Or you're using a specialized program that is smart enough to take advantage of that, which is not many. Only recently have games started to do this. For a long time, games did not benefit at all from this. But now because Intel has said, basically, and AMD have said, all our chips are going to be dual-core from now on, well, now we can take advantage of it. So the first generation of dual-core chips was the Pentium D. And that's what you're seeing still in desktops. I don't think it's even a year old, but already they're outmoded because the next generation is on the way. Intel's replaced Pentium technology with something it calls Core, which isn't that much different, frankly, than a Pentium 4. The Core Duos are, again, dual-core. There are some improvements. They have a lot more cache, which makes a big difference in the performance of a processor, the L2 cache. You know, they're faster. They're definitely faster. The first Core Duo chips came out for laptops. This was the Merom. Now this is where these code names come in. Now that I've explained what these dual-core things are, now we have to start talking about code names. And there are different, you know, Intel gives code names to its chips as there have been development, and then of course replaces them with real marketing names. But you may occasionally hear these code names crop up as Julian brought it up. So the Merom was the first core duo chip. You're seeing that in laptops. And that's what Apple's using in its new laptops. And you're seeing quite a few Core Duo laptops out there. They're great. They're very fast. They're pretty efficient. Despite the fact that they have two processors, they don't drain batteries any faster than the single processor chips. You get a lot of performance. Conroe is what's coming out next month. This is the desktop. Now, the Merom had, as I've seen them anyway, had 2 megabytes of shared L2 cache. The Conra will have 4 megabytes of L2 cache, 2 per chip. That's a lot. And that by itself is probably going to make a significant difference in the speed. So the Conra will be not only faster than the laptop chip, but will be faster, much probably faster than the Pentium D, which we've been using for the last year. And Julian wanted to know, well, should I get a Pentium D chip or should I wait and get this Core Duo chip for desktop, the Conra chip? Given what he told me, I didn't think there'll be a lot of benefit, but this will be a faster chip, and particularly for those of you who do really processor-intensive stuff. If your CPU is working hard, the problem is that the CPUs are getting faster, but the memory's not getting faster. The hard drives aren't getting faster. The video cards aren't getting faster. So having a faster processor may not make much difference, and in many things it won't, many of your operations. So that's why my recommendation to him, and it was personalized based on what he told me he wanted to do, is it's probably fine if he needs a new computer now, and it sounded like he did, to get the Pentium D. If you can wait a couple of months, I think I'd probably wait more than a couple of months. I would probably wait until the machines have been out a couple of months before you run out and buy one. Only because it is a brand new chipset. They're going to use the 965 chipset from Intel. So they've got, there are going to be issues, and they're going to have to solve those issues. And it's always risky to get the first of anything. So particularly like this. So in this case, I think getting a Dell XPS, which is these are running on Pentium D's, or you can get it. I mean, if you really want something, want a little more cash, get the Pentium Extreme Edition. Pentium D Extreme Edition. Which I think the deal with those is they have more cash. That's what makes them extreme. L2 cache is funny. More than almost anything else makes the difference in speeds of these processors. Maybe I should explain what L2 cache is briefly. Turns out in computing, you often do the same thing over and over again. And so caching is something computer scientists came up with a long time ago that's based on that fact. They remember what they did last time because the chances are good you're going to want to do it again. So you see caches in browsers where they save the contents of web pages because you're probably going to go back there. And that way you don't have to download it from the internet. It's on your hard drive already. And you also see that in processors. You'll see cache on processors because it turns out the instructions that you just did, you're probably going to do them again. And it's a lot faster to get it from the L2 cache, which is really fast memory, than it is to get it from your RAM, which is fast, but not as fast. So the more L2 cache and the better manage the L2 cache, the more likely that processor is not going to be choked waiting for your RAM. That's why it makes a big difference. And if there were a single thing that made the biggest difference in processors, it would be that. So, I not having used or seen benchmarks yet for the Conra chips, I don't know how much faster they're going to be. There will be quad cores, by the way. I mean, it never stops. It's not like you're going to get something now and that'll be the top of the line for the next 4 years. No, there'll be something new later. Merom was the first out. That's the mobile chip. Conra is due out soon. Woodcrest is the server chip. People who have played with the Conra or at least seen it in action say it is really great. They really like it. It does, it is lower power, higher performance. It sounds like these are going to be good chips. So, well, probably if you can wait, probably worth waiting for. But again, I wouldn't buy them right away. Intel's making progress. And it's interesting because for a while they were a little bit behind AMD, and I think they're starting to catch up. I really do. 11:48. More of your calls. I just wanted to explain all that because I know we toss around these terms, and I just want to kind of explain what we're talking about for those of you who go, "What?" All in all, I mean, if I'm on a bottom line, almost any computer you can buy today is going to be faster than your needs. For a long time, with Windows, we were using graphical operating systems, very heavy operating systems, very heavy applications, choking the computer. The computer couldn't keep up. But now they are so fast that you're not going to see much improvement in the overall, snappiness of your machine. They're about as snappy as they're going to get until we get much faster hard drives and much faster RAM, much faster video cards. Those are the bottlenecks right now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 11:49.
Hate that behind the eight ball Monday morning feeling? Stay in the loop all weekend long. More stimulating weekends.
KFI AM 640.
11:55, KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Joanne, New Jersey, welcome to KFI.
Hello, Leo.
Hello, Joanne. How are you?
I know I sound like Jersey, don't I?
I love Jersey. My family's from Jersey. I grew up in New York. I love it.
Then how come you don't sound like that?
I don't
anymore?
Know why. I never got that accent. In fact, I lived in Rhode Island for a long time, and that's a very strong accent.
That would be the other state I'd live in if it wasn't here. I love Narragansett.
Yeah.
You are my favorite tech guy in the universe.
Thank you, Joanne.
I just bought one of those, I don't know how you pronounce it, Roku.
Roku, the Sound Lab.
Soundbridge.
They're great.
And I bought it primarily, really, to listen to you anywhere in the house.
Right.
I mean, you know. And I'm having trouble getting the actual URL for this.
Oh, well.
Because, you know, once you click on the streaming thing, and it opens up the Window Media Player,
right.
And then you don't have the actual URL.
And the reason is... advertising. Frankly.
Okay.
They want you to watch that player. Because in the player, you'll see ads pop up.
Yeah, I know. I click on them sometimes.
Yeah.
They're good ads.
So, but you can't use the SoundBridge, and, you know, you need to actually have the URL. I don't know off the top of my head what the URL is, but they have, you know, I can give you the tiny URL for it. Because it's a long... URL, but the chat.
Can you put it in the show notes?
Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes. I probably shouldn't. KFI is going to get mad at me. Blah blah blah. What the
heck?
I don't care.
Are they like an actual like internet radio? Because I'm still having trouble with that like classification. You know,
Is no standard. That's the problem, right? So some of them use Windows Media. Some of them use MP3s. They're all different protocols. So this is Windows Media. We use a service as many radio stations do that does it. And they have a player, and they want you to use the player. So they want you to click the link at KFIAM640.com. However, there is a URL. You can actually get it out of the player. I'll put it in the show notes and just hope the boss isn't listening. But everybody else, if you're on a computer, watch the player. But it won't do you any good on the SoundBridge, because the SoundBridge isn't going to show the player anyway. So,
and I usually do listen to you while I'm here working.
Just do me a favor. When you hear an ad, buy a product.
And I do.
I know you do,
and
Joanne.
And I love your sponsors. Go to my PC. Love it.
All right.
You know, Nod 32. Love it.
All right. We'll
so,
see.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm the geek lady here in Manilocan, and we've met when you were doing a tour back in the TV days.
We had such fun visiting New Jersey. It was the best place for us to go, and mostly because Patrick just, you know, his family's there and everything.
Patrick was with you. It was fun.
I miss those days. Well, it's nice to talk to you, Joanne. I will put the link in the show notes. It's tinyurl.com/8FGXK.
Okay.
And that's our good friends in the chat room do this because this comes up a lot in the chat room too. So you can always go to the chat room and get the current. Sometimes they change the URL to defeat this. So you can always get the current one in the chat room.
Okay.
Thanks, Joanne.
Thank you so
much. Keep listening. I really appreciate it.
Of course I will.
Good. I'm counting on you.
Bye-bye.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 11:59. Jessica Rosenthal is in the KFI News Center.
June 10, 2006.
70s for Metro LA and Orange Counties, 80s in the valleys, and hazy sunshine inland. It's 72 in Los Alamitos, 76 in Lake Forest, 76 in Arcadia, and 68 in Santa Monica. KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 12:06, I'm Jessica Rosenthal, KFI News.
Thank you, Jessica. KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number. David's on the line from North Carolina. Hello, David. Welcome to KFI.
Yes, Leo. I have a Windows Media Player problem. I was listening to the radio online, and most of them require Windows Media Player. Then I logged off. Finished for the evening. When I came back online and loaded up, there was no sound through the Windows Media Player. There's nothing.
And you and have you tried playing any local files as well from Windows Media Player?
What do you mean local files?
Well, like fire on your hard drive instead of a streaming radio station.
Yeah, I tried some MP3 files, mm-hmm. MIDI files.
Nothing, huh?
Yeah, they play fine.
Oh, they play fine. Okay. Just the radio doesn't play.
Right, when I'm streaming, it doesn't play.
Okay, well, at least we know that your audio is still working.
Yeah, the audio's fine.
And and you're using the latest version of Windows Media Player?
Windows 10.
10.
I upgraded to 10.
Okay.
Should I reinstall the player?
No, it sounds like it's an issue with the streaming audio only, so I'm wondering...
Because I tried KFI mm-hmm. and three or four other different stations. None of them. And I tried it on
now,
another...
One way to try it that I would like you to try is, you know, there's a button on the Windows Media Player that says radio.
Right.
There's actually radio channels on the... And it's MSN radio. See if those work.
Okay, radio channel.
Yeah, so, you know, right at the top, I hate the new Windows Media Player, by the way. They don't have menus anymore. I mean, they hide the menus.
Is there any way I can eliminate Windows Media Player to something else that most of the radio station website use in place?
Yeah, I think there is an alternative. I mean, you'll end up using Windows Media Player in some form or fashion. If you want to listen to KFI, I think you have to use Windows Media Player.
Right. And most of the station I
But there are other internet radio stations you can use Music Match for, or you know, there's lots of internet radio that doesn't require Windows Media Player. That's what we were talking about with Joanne last hour, which is there's 80 different standards for internet audio.
But like your station requires.
But you have to, right.
And so
most commercial radio stations now require, unfortunately, right. Windows Media
and
Player.
And that's the problem.
Yeah.
I get no sound when I'm streaming them. But the player itself works fine with all the other medium, but the streaming does not work.
Does it? Do you? When you're watching the streaming, do you actually? Does it look like it's actually streaming it in?
No, it's just. I was listening to your station, and when I went on, nothing. No sound.
I'm thinking that it may not be Media Player at all, but it may be security software that you have on your system. All of these streaming radio stations use non-standard ports for the data. And that's the kind of thing a router or a firewall or an internet security program would block. So I think it's very likely, since Windows Media Player is still playing audio just fine, it's only the stuff that you get from the internet directly in play that's not working. I think it's very likely that that's not working. Now, one thing to try is something like Music Match from musicmatch.com. See if its radio stations work. They use a different port number. But if you have for instance, and this is, I get this problem a lot with Norton Internet Security. If you're running Norton Internet Security and you're not hearing any audio on Windows Media Player, you probably won't hear any on Music Match either. And that'll tell you, yeah, it's being blocked. I think it's most likely, David, that that's what's going on, that there's some security program. I don't think anything's wrong with Windows Media Player. Justin, North Hollywood, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Justin.
Hey, I got a problem with my laptop.
Yes.
It's a Dell 2-point-something gigahertz, 2.6 or whatever.
Okay.
When I go into system information, it says 2 gigahertz, but right below it, it says 311 megahertz and then 512 RAM. So the 311, what it's actually running at? Because it's really slow lately.
Interesting. Let me look at my computer. I've never seen a second line like that. It might be that the laptop, Intel chips use something called speed step to slow themselves down when they're being used less. So let me just
see. But they didn't have that about 3 years ago, did they?
So underneath, that's interesting. So you're looking at the system properties control panel and you've got the general tab. It says you've got a 2 gigahertz processor. And then underneath it, it says 311 gigahertz.
Megahertz. Oh, no, megahertz. And then, comma, you know, the RAM or whatever. RAM's 512.
Wow. That doesn't sound right.
And it's really slow. I mean...
Yeah, it might be slowed down. I mean, one way to check to see if it's got this, you know, low power on is to go into your control panel and look at the power options.
Okay.
And what you might want to try is setting it to, you know, always on, which will turn off almost everything. And there's also options in there for slowing down the processor if the processor can be slowed down. So, I'm thinking that must be what it, I've never seen a two-line entry like that. But I think your diagnosis, especially since you know it's slow, I think that sounds right. It sounds like it's not running at full speed. But they do that to save battery life. What I would do is try plugging it in and then going to the power options and playing with them so that everything is at full speed and see if that fixes it. John, Mission Viejo, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, I'm hoping you can recommend an email merge program that uses HTML or allows HTML for Mac OS X. I'm currently using Thunderbird.
And you want to merge email from where?
My email client list. I want to be able to send
email
to everybody.
But you want to do a mass mailing. I get it.
Yeah,
you,
exactly.
Yeah.
But for newsletters and such, for business, it'll say, you know, Dear Leo, Dear John,
et
cetera.
And you want to run it. Now, see, you can use online services to do this, but you want to do it on your computer.
Exactly.
Okay.
I do have an online service that where people can go to my website and sign up for the newsletter that way.
Right.
But I also want to be able to reach out to a client list or several client lists that I already have in a Thunderbird program.
Yeah, the reason, is it a really long list?
No, it's a couple hundred.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the reason there's all these online services is most people don't want their bandwidth to be consumed by sending out millions of emails, right? So they use a provider, like a listserv provider, to do this. But if you just have a few hundred, yeah, there's a number of, I think there's a free one called iMail List that is open source freeware that does HTML mails. I mean, if you're not doing a lot of them, as you say, just several hundred, that's pretty easy.
It's called iMail List?
iMail List, yeah.
Okay, now I'm going to check that one out. Is it better to use, whether it's purchase or freeware, an all-in-one email/mail merge program versus a software program that works alongside my Thunderbird?
How often do you do this?
Probably once a month.
Yeah, I would just use a standalone program and not get it involved with Thunderbird.
Okay. And is this iMail list?
It's standalone.
Program?
Yeah, you'll merge a client list into it. You'll create an email in it, and it will send them out. Now, you may have issues, and this is the other reason people use services, with your internet service provider. A lot of times they see a lot of traffic going out all at once. They think you're a spammer.
Uh-huh.
So if it all of a sudden stops working, you may have to make a call to them and say, explain, oh, I'm doing small mailing lists. Are you using a business class internet service provider, or is it home?
It is home.
Yeah. So you got to be careful, because what I would do is send small batches and spread them out.
That's easy. As small as in 50 or 100?
Yeah, or 25.
Or even that's pretty
large. Yeah, you don't want, I don't know what the, you know, threshold is for internet service providers, but what you don't want to do is get a red flag, and then they'll say, well, you need business class service if you're going to be doing that, and all of a sudden you'll be paying twice as much.
Okay.
If you go to Version Tracker, I don't know if you've ever used Version Tracker.
No. Huh?
Wonderful place for finding software for, actually, Mac, Windows, or Palm, but they have sections for all three. But they're really primarily a Mac place. If you go in there and look, you'll see about a dozen different programs that do this.
Might Version Tracker also have a program for delivering downloads that are purchased via the website?
That's a little
credit card.
Right, that's a little more complicated. That really wouldn't be Macintosh or Windows software. That'd be server side software. And probably, most likely, part of an e-commerce package.
Okay.
And unless you're doing a lot of this, I think probably best to use a service provider that does this. Somebody like Ecelerate, people like that. I'm sure if you've ever bought shareware, you've run across these guys.
Right. Well, there's one that I used. It's just a program you purchase, like $30, and it goes forever. And you incorporate the PHP code? Yeah, you can just incorporate the PHP code, and that seems to work pretty well.
But
every time you put something in your cart, If you're using Safari or Firefox, a new browser window opens every time. Works great in Explorer, but a new window, I want to avoid that.
Right. I mean, if you're sophisticated enough to do it yourself, there are, of course, a lot of open source free e-commerce packages that'll do all of this for you. I generally tell people, I don't know if you want to be in that business, you know. Do you want to be the programmer, web administrator, technician, sysadmin, and all of that, or do you want to sell your product?
Mm-hmm.
If what you want to do is sell your product, I think I'd probably look at a provider that does the e-commerce stuff for you, and particularly the download. Look at Accelerate, Accelerate. And that's really how they work. And a lot of shareware authors use companies like this because they don't want to get in that business. It's just much easier just to let, you know, you provide the file to them. They handle the credit card. They handle the transaction. They validate it. They even give you serial numbers and all that, so you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, that sounds like a piece of cake.
Yeah, I think it's a better way to do it. Unless, you know, if you get off on hacking PHP code.
No, not at least. I actually try to avoid it.
Yeah, exactly.
A tiny portion of the business, but it is convenient for the visitors to the website to be able to download this stuff.
See how much they charge. I mean, they may take too big a cut for it to be economically feasible for you.
Yeah.
But that's the way it works. I mean, you pay for not having to do it yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Great. Neil, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Good luck, John. I should have asked him what he's selling. Michael Woodland Hills, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Leo. I got an old Pentium 3 running Windows 98, and I was using HouseCall. And
that's
suddenly,
the online antivirus program.
It just, you know, it's downloading its stuff, and suddenly it stopped and gave me a runtime error.
Uh-oh.
And that was the end. I've reloaded the 98 files. I've downloaded Internet Explorer 6 from some of the places you can get those old programs, you know.
Hold on the line. We'll talk about how you recover Windows 98. Fortunately, it's not too hard to do.
Well, oh, no, I'm sorry. Windows 98 works fine.
Oh.
Only Internet Explorer does not work.
Well, even in that case, it's such a fundamental part of the operating system. I would just, one of the things you can do with 98 is just reinstall Windows on top
of it. Which I've already done.
And it didn't fix it.
Didn't, no. See, I get the same thing. I get this.
Have you tried the,
if you want.
Well, what happens oftentimes when you're running an antivirus is it removes things that you need. It sounds like what happened was HouseCall was doing this. It uses an ActiveX control. It was doing the scan. Was it removing viruses or just scanning?
No, it was just starting, you know.
It was just starting out.
If you haven't been there for a while, it re-downloads the stuff.
Right. Oh, well, that shouldn't have caused any problem. That's just getting the latest version of the control. Something got corrupted.
Yes, it sure did.
Have you gone online and done the instructions for removing and reinstalling Internet Explorer?
No, that I haven't done.
All right. I'm going to put a link in the show notes. Microsoft has a tech note. It's kind of weird because really Internet Explorer is so tightly integrated, but there is actually a way to kind of try to repair it.
No, I did look at those, and they're primarily for XP. I can't find much for 98.
Yeah, you have
anymore.
To find the old tech note. I'll see if I can find it and put it in the show notes for you.
Okay.
That's probably what you need to do.
Thank you very much.
Sure, Michael. Thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Captain Dale Dye, tomorrow evening, 5 to 7 p.m., KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
1227, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. The show notes are online at KFIAM640.com. The show notes is a website I maintain with a page for every show and links and so forth, the things I talk about on the show. And so you can get there by going to KFIAM640.com. You'll see right on the front page there is a list of show hosts. Actually, if you're listening to the show now, like if you're listening to it live, my picture will be on the front page. Just click that. And then on my page, underneath my picture, just click official website. If you're listening to the show afterwards, you taped it or whatever, just go to KFIAM640.com. Hover your mouse over the shows and then pick Leo Laporte. Go to the official website. That's leo.am. That'll take you to the show notes. And this is show 255. Wow. For Saturday, June 10th. Also on the show notes page, you'll find links to our chat room. And our great chat moderators are in there. Mike B, I guess, taking the day off, but everybody else is in there having a great time. And I invite you to stop by, Dan and Ash and Carrot and Oliver and Sweeks and about 101 close personal friends. You'll also find audio from previous shows. I've got all the shows up there, so you can download them and listen to them after the fact. And you can even subscribe to the podcast of the shows. So all of that's at KFIAM640.com. Just go to my page, the Leo Laporte page, and then right down on the right, you'll see official website. That takes you to leo.am. It's 1229 now on KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. We've got Jessica Rosenthal in the KFI News Center.
Dr. Dean Adel, this afternoon at 2.
KFI, AM 640.
1236, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on KFI. We're hitting the road. I'll be at the Bel Air Camera Store next Saturday, June 17th, the day before Father's Day, to do the show there from 11 to 2, and you're invited to come by. It's on Kinross in Westwood. You know, Bel Air Camera. I mean, been around for 50 years. Great place. Really nice people. And we're to talk about digital cameras after the show. I'll do a seminar on digital, choosing a digital camera and the ins and outs of digital photography and stuff. I'm not a photography expert, but we have experts there also. Great prices. It's going to be fun. June 17th, next Saturday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Join me for a live broadcast at Bel Air Camera. Details are online at KFIAM640.com. And we will see you out there. Back to the phones. Lots of calls. Derek Carson, welcome, KFI.
Leo, I got a problem. I get an error connecting to my ISP, and this error started when I accidentally plugged it into a landline that was dead. And ever since then, you know, I keep getting this error. It's error 680. Says there was no dial tone error connecting to, you know, net zero opening port, and it asked me if I want to redial, cancel, or more info. And I can't, you know, I can't get rid of this. This thing is daily.
Yeah. Problem, you know, Net Zero requires you to use its own dialer, as you know, its own dialer software and so forth. And it sounds like, I mean, it's notoriously bad. And it sounds like it's a little broken, to be honest with you.
Leo.
Huh?
I'm not advertising them, but...
No, I know. Nor am I. I mean, the price is right. What is it, $4 a month, $5 a month?
Something like that, yeah.
I think probably what you want to do, at least what I would try, unless you've already tried it, is uninstalling all the Net Zero software.
Okay.
And do you still have the disk?
Yeah.
Yeah, reinstalling it.
Okay, yeah, that's probably the best thing. And I, while I was on hold, I had another quick question for
sure.
You. You got a moment?
Sure.
I shamelessly steal internet from my neighbor.
yeah, you are shameless if you announce it on the KFI.
Everybody, no. I got a wireless adapter, on air, and. But the thing that, you know, when I'm hooked up to a landline, of course I use my Net Zero, but, you know, when I'm just trying to check my email real quick and I'm using my wireless adapter, sometimes I want to shoot something, via Microsoft Outlook. And, unfortunately, I'm trying to reconfigure my mail support so, I can actually, you know.
Yeah, it's going to be hard because, you'll have to know what his, your neighbor's email settings are.
Oh. My settings?
Yeah. Well, the reason is, okay, when you're using Net Zero,
yeah,
you're going through your own account. Now you're going to use his Wi-Fi, right? And his, what? Pardon me?
Yes.
Yeah. His internet service provider expects you to be using their outgoing email server. You can't use Net Zero's server without using the Net Zero software.
Correct.
The problem is you don't know what your neighbor's settings are, obviously. So
yeah.
They're not allowing it through. Now, one way you could kind of get around this is set up a Gmail account.
Yes.
And Gmail gives you an outgoing... What you need is an outgoing email server. You need one that you can use wherever you are. Well, Gmail's one of them. Gmail will give you, you'll need to know what the SMTP server is. So if you sign up for a Gmail account and then you look in the advanced, you know, configuration information, they'll tell you what the SMTP server is, and you can use that.
Will Gmail allow me to receive incoming as well?
But it has to be to the Gmail address. You want it to your net zero address. You're getting an email at your net zero address.
That's one of the accounts that I have.
Yeah, it's in order to get incoming email through your neighbor's Wi-Fi, you have to.
Is there a problem?
No. Well, it's illegal. I mean, people do it all the time. In fact, nowadays it's trivial because everybody's got Wi-Fi, and a lot of people, even today, still don't secure it. And so, you know, in a way, it's his fault because he's just leaving it. You know, I've had debates over this. My opinion, it's kind of a de minimis usage. I don't think there's. I mean, it is probably technically illegal, but there's one case I remember of a guy getting arrested for doing this. He sat outside of a business and used their Wi-Fi. The police noticed him sitting there and arrested him, and he actually was prosecuted for it.
I'm small time.
I liken it to when you're walking down the street and you got a bag of chips and you're done with the bag of chips and you want to throw it out, and you could throw it on the street or you could open up somebody's garbage bin and throw it in there.
That's right.
Technically, you're using their garbage service, but it's kind of a minimal usage. Now, if you were using your neighbor's wireless networking to steal music, to download music, you could potentially be getting him in trouble. That's different. Plus, not to mention tying up his bandwidth. But if all you're doing is quickly checking some email, I think that's pretty much a de minimis usage. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, I don't think you can. It would be there would be that's. I'm not giving you a legal defense, but I don't think there's anything that much wrong with it. What I usually tell people when they say that is, I say, well, you want to be a good neighbor. Go next door and say, hey, dude, you know, you should know that you are not protecting your wireless network. Now, I'm a nice guy and I'm not going to steal anything from you. But technically, somebody could come along and do you some damage because you're not protected. So let me show you how to protect it. And by the way, you know, would you mind if I continued to use it once in a while just to check my email? The risk of that is he's going to say, what are you talking about? Get out of my house. But if you guys have a good relationship, it's a nice thing to do. You're helping him in setting it up and securing it and turning on WPA access. You'll get the password and you'll say, do you mind if, you know, I'm not going to use it a lot, but just once in a while, can I have dial up and it's not working? Can I check my email? And he'll say,
yeah, we can do that. I'm pretty sure we can.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the ethical thing to do in a situation like this. Now, the problem is getting your email from other accounts. If those other accounts have POP servers, which Net Zero does not, I think, you can use Outlook to get it. You have to get the POP. What you need to configure Outlook to send and receive mail is you need the addresses of or the names of two different servers. The POP server is the mail that you download. That's the incoming mail server. You'll need that, and that goes in, you know, when you set up Outlook, you'll see that goes in the configuration of Outlook. The outgoing mail server is called the SMTP, or the Simple Mail Transport Protocol, SMTP server. That's for outbound mail. So you need both. Now, Gmail, you can get the outbound, but you can't get the inbound because the inbound mail goes to Gmail. You can get it, but it will only give you the mail that's coming to that Gmail account. If you can tell your other accounts, forward my mail to Gmail, then you'll be able to get all your mail. But it sounds like what you need to do is log into each account individually, and for that, you need the POP server for those accounts. Thanks for the call, Derek. I appreciate it. And, you know, I think it's probably the right thing to do to clue your neighbor in. You're going to protect him and say, and in return, I just want to use your stuff for once in a while. You know, you run the risk, you might say, no. Lewis in Whittier, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Lewis.
Hello. My friend forgot her password, and the hint didn't help.
Uh-oh.
You know, right?
The password for what?
Windows XP. And so what I said was, well, you're going to have to reinstall Windows. But she told me someone showed her a way to go, and she won't tell me just because she's being kind of mean right now. But
your ex-friend, huh?
No. We're still friends. She just knows I'm sort of a techie guy, and she kind of stumped me.
Ha-ha, so fooled you.
She's floating on that, right. But I don't believe it. She claims that she found a way to change her password, reset her password inside of Windows Safe Mode. Is that true? And if so, how is that secure?
Windows secure? I think there's a problem here. We have a disconnect here. So,
well, you better fix that then. If you're allowed to go into safe mode and change your password, that's not very secure.
It's not always the case, but on many OEM installations of Windows, not if you install it yourself, but if you buy a Dell, or I don't know if Dell does it, but some OEMs, some manufacturers who sell computers, in their default install in Windows, they do in fact create an administrator account with a blank password. You have to go into safe mode to access it. But if you go into safe mode, you can log in as an administrator with a blank password. Now, once you're an administrator, you can do anything, including change passwords.
Okay, but normally, if you were to install Windows yourself, the retail version and all that...
Yeah, you wouldn't...
Have to reinstall Windows to change it.
No. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh. Now, here's where you can one-up her, okay?
Okay.
There are Linux disks. You can't do it from within Windows if you've installed Windows normally, but there are. But you can boot into Linux and clear the passwords.
Okay, if she had a Linux disk.
So she'd have to download a Linux distribution. Usually you download one that's specifically for this purpose. There's the emergency boot CD is one, EBCD. You download it, you burn it to a disk, and you boot from it. And it's actually trivially easy. One of the menu items is clear passwords. You press that button, and that's it. Bingo.
Oh, so that's not all that secure either, then,
no.
Is it really?
No, Windows
it's
is
really
not secure.
That secure. It's just kind of making it a little more, it's just sort of like a little block you got to go over.
It's more secure than it was. It used to be in Windows 98 when it asked for the password, you just hit escape.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. I didn't protect my stuff back in 98 days.
No, nobody did. So it is possible to secure Windows and to prevent all of that, but it would have to
be like a pre-installed OEM type of, like you're talking about when you get like a Dell system or something where it's already
on
there.
Right. In many cases.
And there'll be in many cases not as, but there'll be like a menu option in there saying as administrator.
You just log out. And reboot into safe mode and enter as enter administrator as your login and enter a blank password. If you get into safe mode without logging in, then you would log out of safe mode and enter the administrator with a blank password.
Oh, okay. Do you just type in the word administrator?
Yeah, the administrator is the user.
Oh, as the user.
Mm-hmm.
I see. Okay.
That's what technique she's using.
I'm going to find out now. Or you can get the Linux, download the Linux disk.
Or you can download EBCD or a variety of other Linux boot disks that will let you clear the passwords, yeah.
And those are free downloads?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Cool. It's actually, everybody should have EBCD. It's absolutely free. It has a lot of utilities. It's the emergency boot CD for Windows XP, and it is, in fact, a Linux operating system. And it really is.
Where do you go? Where do you go? EBC.com?
Yeah, it's PCMinistry.com. I'll put a link in the show notes. If you do a Google for EBCD, mm-hmm. it'll be the very first entry in there. And
okay.
Very handy.
Okay. One more quick question, if you don't mind.
Certainly.
Thank you for that one. I was always curious about this. You know, in the CMOS, the firmware area of the computer, there's a section you can set up your power options.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also do it in the Windows software.
Right.
I'm wondering, do they conflict, compete, work together? How does that work? Does one override the other?
That's a good question. But you're setting the ACPI, the Advanced or APCI, Advanced Power Configuration Information in the BIOS.
Right, you can go in the CMOS and tell it to power down after so many seconds. And you can also do those same kinds of things in the software in the Windows operating system. And I'm wondering, does one override
I don't think
the
one
other?
Overrides the other, but it's actually, there are many other cases where you can set up information about your hardware either in BIOS or in the operating system. You remember, the BIOS doesn't assume you're running Windows.
Right, so before you even get there.
Right. So they provide that hardware. That option is in hardware. So my understanding is that when you set it in Windows, it's accessing the same area of hardware that the BIOS does.
It should change it. CMOS.
It's the same thing as setting the time and date. You can set the time and date in BIOS.
Got it.
Or you could set it in Windows. And in both cases, it sets the same area.
Okay, so either way, you're kind of just setting the same
thing.
Area,
yep.
I guess. So probably if you were to set it to CMOS, by the time you get to Windows, you'll see those options up there already.
Right. Well, it may be that Windows remembers its settings and overwrites this whatever you've been done.
It may overwrite the default,
I'm not sure on that, yeah.
Okay, I was always kind of wondering about that because they never really got rid of the power options
right.
on the CMOS side, even though you can do it in the operating system.
Now, what happened is that manufacturers started making what they call Energy Star computers that had all of these power options. So Microsoft wrote an interface to it in a control panel, so you can configure it without exiting Windows. But the truth is, that's part of the hardware. It's not part of Windows necessarily. It's a capability that the hardware has or does not have. So if you don't have those capabilities, Windows won't allow you to set them either. You can only do it on an Energy Star compatible computer that has ACPI. There is a problem because ACPI is implemented differently on a variety of computers. So there's kind of a standard that is not very standard. At 12:51, 9 away from 1, Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
93 sex offenders and 12 serial sex offenders coming across the U.S. border illegally every day.
Wow. John and Ken today at 3.
And you know who's getting hurt the worst?
Yeah.
Almost half of the child molestations were Hispanic kids.
John and Ken, Saturdays 3 to 5 on AM 640, online and on demand at KFIAM640.com.
High speed internet nowadays is really more a right than a privilege. Everybody deserves high-speed internet because more and more, that's how we're buying things online. That's how we're watching TV. It's how we're communicating with our members of Congress. Online is really a way of life nowadays. If you're still on dial-up, as you might have heard with our last caller or a couple of callers ago, it can be painful. Not only is it slow, but it's configuration nightmare and it's tricky and wouldn't you like to have high speed? Maybe you've thought it's too expensive. It's not. Not with DSL Extreme. DSL, I'm so proud of these guys. They are really doing their best to make internet access universal. High speed internet. By dropping the price to the lowest price in the country. $12.95 a month. And your first month's free. This is less than a car wash already every month. And your first one's free now. And it's guaranteed for a year. There's no setup fee. There's no extra services you have to buy. The modem is free. The tech support's free. DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET right now. Some restrictions apply, so you want to call them right away. 1-866-2-GET-NET. You can also visit them online at dslextreme.com. High-speed internet for the lowest price in the country. And the first month is free. Well, you can't beat that. $12.95 a month only from DSL Extreme. Call 1-866-2-GET-NET.
Information doesn't take the weekend off.
Neither do we.
KFI, all weekend long.
KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. I don't usually plug my podcast, but I have to say I'm really excited about the next This Week in Tech, which will come out in the next few days. We did it yesterday at the VloggerCon and talked with some of the most amazing people. The Ask a Ninja guy. We talked with Andrew Barron, who does Rocket Boom, two of the biggest video podcasts out there, but also the guy who invented podcasting, Dave Weiner, Robert Scoble, who's probably the best-known blogger in the world from Microsoft. Of course, my co-host from The Screensavers, Patrick Norton, my co-host from Call for Help, Amber MacArthur, and John C. Dvorak, the world's most read, widely read computer columnist. All of that on one show. It's a podcast. You can get it from twit.tv, T-W-I-T, short for This Week in Tech. TV. I do a bunch of podcasts, including this radio show. And every once in a while, one happens that it was just so exciting. Now, I have a lot of work to edit it down, so it won't appear today. It'll probably come out Sunday, Monday, maybe Tuesday, depending on how much work I have to do on it. It's also the place to go, though, to get all my other podcasts. And, of course, if you go to the show notes page, you can get the KFI podcast of my radio show, which I'm now getting. I'm going to try to put out pretty much after the show every day, so you can get it right away. News is next. I'll be back with another hour of your calls, 1-800-520-1KFI. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio at 12:59. Jessica Rosenthal is in the KFI News Center.
June 10, 2006.
It's 68 in Newport Beach, 73 in Fullerton, 70 in Palmdale, and 72 in Hollywood. KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 106, I'm Jessica Rosenthal, KFI News.
Thank you, Jessica. 106, KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. For another hour, 1-800-520-1KFI. Here till 2, and then it's Dr. Dean Adele from 2 to 3. And a fresh John and Ken from 3 to 5 this afternoon. It's going to be a great day on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number. Sharon in La Mirada, welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Sharon.
My problem is I have a laptop I just purchased late last fall, and I started having problems in January when I run my virus scan, which came with the laptop, or I defrag. It will get partway through, and then I get a blue screen that says a problem has been detected and Windows has been shut down to prevent damage to my computer, yada, yada, yada. And then it says it's beginning dump of physical memory.
That's just a
and
big, bad crash.
What? It repeatedly does this, but only when it when those two things happen, virus scan or defrag, or if my battery goes too low.
You get a blue screen when your battery goes really low.
Yes, the same blue screen.
Well, no, I mean, the problem is Windows is such a complex ecosystem that it's so hard to say what's precisely causing it. I mean, you've got some clues, but it could be so many things, really. In a case like this, the only recommendation I could give you would be back up your data. And, you know, I hope you got disks with your laptop, the system recovery disks.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, running those will erase the hard drive, including all your data. That's why you got to back up all the programs you've installed. But it will put it back to the way it was when you got it.
Okay.
And I presume you didn't have these blue screens when you first got it. You don't know.
I don't know. I think the battery going low, I noticed when it would go like to hibernate, I'd get it. So I put to where it would never just turn off on its own.
So the blue screen happened when you hibernated.
Yes.
So all three of the only thing I can see in common with all three of these is a lot of disk activity. Hibernating actually saves the contents of your memory, all 512 megabytes or whatever, to a hard drive. Defrag accesses the entire hard drive, moves things around. The virus scan has to access the entire hard drive. So it sounds like there is something related to those three causes. Now, I could speculate what it might be, but I can't tell you for sure. One thing you might, you know, if I were running a computer shop and you brought it in, first thing I'd probably do is run a program called SpinWrite on it just to see if your hard drive formatting is intact. If there's problems with it or anything wrong with the hard drive. SpinWrite is a low-level program that really examines the drive and actually can reformat it underneath the data without modifying the data. And sometimes that fixes a problem like this. But it's $80. It's kind of not really worth buying just for this. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why if I had a shop, you know, every shop would have it. Mm-hmm. I think probably. Is it a big pain for you to back everything up? You have a lot of data on there?
No.
It's not a bad idea to do it anyway, right? Because you have a backup. And then do the system recovery. And then watch very closely to see, you know, the first thing you're going to do after you do the system recovery is you're going to run Windows Update to get it up to date. Who made the laptop? Okay. Who's the manufacturer?
Dell.
Okay. I mean, they're pretty good. And it's rare that they would ship a laptop with a system recovery is an image of what's on the hard drive. Now, it's possible that they could have a bug in it, right? And so everybody who got that batch of laptops has this problem. But it's rare. I mean, every manufacturer that happens sometimes, but it's very, very rare. So it's probable that unless there's something physically wrong with your computer, which this, by the way, could also be a symptom of, the hard drive controller might be actually crashing when it accesses a certain part of a memory, let's say. So unless it's barring any hardware failure, system recovery should get it back to normal. You shouldn't see these blue screens. And then you want to watch carefully to see if they come back. You kind of want to keep track of everything you do to modify your system.
Okay.
Because then that's another clue. You know, if you knew when it started, if you could say, yeah, it started when I installed XYZ, well, you have a good idea what the culprit is.
Right.
What I would suggest, though, is back up your data. It's good to have a backup. I bet you haven't done it yet anyway. Mm-hmm. Have you installed a lot of applications?
No.
No. So you don't have to worry about gathering all the application installers and all that. Just back up your data, run the system recovery, right away do Windows Update, because it's been, you know, 6 months since you got that. So it's 6 months out of date. So you make sure you add all those patches and then use it for a while without, you know, restore your data, but use it without installing anything new. But try the antivirus, try defragging, you know, turn hibernation on, see if it hibernates. If you don't get any blue screens, it may just be that there was a corrupted file. One of the files got damaged. And every time Windows loaded that file, maybe it's a disk access routine, maybe it's a driver, it would crash. And it just happens that it loads that driver and those three programs. You know, that's a problem. It's so hard to tell. Is it hardware? Is it software? Is it, you know, a disk error? You can't really tell just from that information. But a system recovery will get it back to the way it was, and then it shouldn't happen anymore.
Great. Yes. On the virus scan, it stops on one file.
Ah.
And I looked at that file, and it looks like a file that they were trying to install when they were building the computer.
Ah.
And they had, like, errors, so there were about five different entries.
Ah,
and it freezes on that one.
Yeah.
And then,
you know what it sounds like to me? It does sound like, in fact, that there's a disk error. So, and that could have happened at any point. You know, it just got corrupted.
Okay.
And what you're seeing, when you see five entries for the same file, it probably aren't five copies of that file. It's the table of contents is damaged. It's like somebody took the index cards in a library and threw them up in the air and put them back in. So that would be exactly the kind of problem that could cause what you just described.
Okay.
So in that case, the system recovery should fix it because it reformats the hard drive as part of the process.
Okay, great. Can I ask you one other quick question?
Yeah.
Okay, the same computer,
I love your wind chimes, by the way. They sound beautiful. I love your wind chimes.
Oh, thank you.
They sound beautiful.
Thank you. I totally enjoy them.
Mm-hmm. Especially on a nice gusty day like today. Ding dong. So, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Okay, I have a wireless card for when I travel, because I travel a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it was working fine. I flew on an airplane and just used my computer offline looking at some different files and things mm-hmm. for my business. And after that, my computer stopped recognizing the card.
Oh, yay, yay. You're snake bit.
Well, you know, I hate to tell you, but when I bought this computer, I bought three computers at the same time. Yeah. One is still in this box. My desktop at home had to have the hard drive replaced because they did something wrong on that.
All from Dell?
Yes.
Boy, that's terrible. You know, Dell. I've always bought computers from Dell. We've used Dell for a long time on the TV shows, and they've been very reliable. But you know, you might have got them on a bad day.
I must have.
It sounds like you did. I hate to say it.
It was storming or something.
Well, and I would call them and say, you know, dude, I got Dell, but you got to fix it because it's not working right. And I got three of them that aren't working right. They should stand behind. They should really stand behind that. You shouldn't have to put up with that.
Well, the desktop, they did come out and put in a whole new hard drive.
You know, it might
be. Like I say, the other one for my office is still in the box.
It might be. Why haven't you opened it?
I have been caring for a really sick father.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Like, I'm 12 hours away from home. So when I go back home, I'll be opening that and finding out
what's wrong with it. You know, it may be. Both of those sound like they're hard drive errors. It may be that the box, the shipment got shook up pretty good.
Oh, no.
It might be, you know, UPS, not Dell. I don't know. It might be that there was, you know, if it's really, you know, jiggled enormously, that's exactly the kind of things that could happen. I think for sure on your is it a laptop? That mm-hmm. you want to do the system recovery. Now, the card, those cards are fragile, and it could be a stray electrical signal fried in. It doesn't work at all.
The card, actually, I tried it in a friend's computer who has the same wireless server.
Yeah.
The card works fine.
Oh, that's
her
really
good.
Her
card in my computer does not work.
So it's not the card. It's the computer. Now you got a card
computer.
Dell. Because what it means is the motherboard's damaged.
Oh, it does. Okay.
Yeah. There's probably, it was a short circuit or a transient, electrical transient fried it. But if her card doesn't work and your card works in hers, it's mm-hmm. your motherboard. It's your computer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Call Dell.
Okay.
And is it still under warranty?
It is.
Yeah.
I definitely, on all of them, got a 3-year warranty.
As soon as you got some time to come up for air, and I understand why you haven't dealt with it, but as soon as you do, I think this is one for Dell. They have to stand by that. And if you don't, okay, if you don't get good service from them, you call me and tell me.
I will do that.
We'll rake them over the coals on the air. We'll use the power of KFI to get Dell to their knees. And I have to say, I mean, I have good results with Dell. I like them. I think they're a good company. I've talked to Michael Dell in the past, but, you know, every company has, you know, can have a bad day. Every company. There's no computer company that makes 100% perfect computers. The test of a good computer company is not whether they're 100% perfect computers, but whether they stand behind their computers, and if there's something wrong, fix it. And how easily, how hard you have to fight. Dell was always very good in that area, and I think that, you know, they've outsourced now to India their call centers. I think they're not as good as they used to be in that area. So let me know. I'd like to keep up on that one. That's the test. Do you stand behind it? Do you fix it? There's always problems. In life, there are always problems. Things never go right, but do you stand behind it? Are you responsible? Do you fix the problem? That's the test. That's what you're looking for. 118. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
Handle on the news, warts and all. Monday morning, 6 to 7. KFI, AM 640.
124 on KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Back to the phones we go. Allison's on the line from Mission Viejo. Hello, Allison. Welcome to KFI.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for your patience. I appreciate your
No problem. This morning we turned on the computer, and I kept getting this spyware that popped up. It took me to... It said that I had the Windows XP Pro security settings running, and it was telling me that I needed to download Titan.
Titan. Well,
Titan Shield anti-spyware.
Well, if they say you need it, you must need it.
I don't
My
think so.
My goodness. Good for you.
Well, I don't even use the XP. I don't normally use the XP firewall or anything like that. I have a
It just makes
firewall.
Me mad that they would use spyware or pop-ups to advertise security software.
Well, I can't get this about.com. It's about://
Right.
Out of, I can't change my internet.
That's your new homepage. Yeah, and that's what happens. That's what spyware frequently does, is it changes the start page. So about:// is an empty page, start page.
Okay. I have done system restores, and it won't let me go back.
Far enough. Yeah. One of the problems with spyware these days is it's really virulent, and once it gets in your system, it's really hard to get rid of. You know, for a while, you could use anti-spyware software as you would use antivirus software to disinfect.
I use AdAware.
Yeah, and you can try. I mean, there's SpyBot is also free, and Microsoft, if you're using XP, Microsoft Defender is also free.
Okay.
I would try that one, Microsoft.com/spyware. It's just another you know, program. The problem is that in many cases they cannot remove the spyware. It's so deeply ingrained into your system that to remove it would break the system.
Okay.
And that's, these spyware authors have gotten, I frankly don't think it's spyware anymore. I consider it a virus, and they've gotten as good as virus authors, better in some ways.
Because virus scan, McAfee saying it's not
a virus. Well, there's also the issue is antivirus companies are sometimes loath to call stuff spyware or call it viruses because that's such a negative, and they don't want to get sued.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mess, to be honest with you. It's just a mess. Really, the best advice I can give people is don't get this stuff in the first place. Now, too late for you. You've already got it. There are a couple of choices you have.
My husband says it's called anti-spyware box.
Isn't that nice? Just kills me that they put spyware on your system and they call it anti-spyware.
Uh-huh.
So there's this website I recommend called spywareinfo.com.
Okay.
And what you have here is a browser hijacker, or a BHO.
Yes.
And
I have been hijacked.
You have been hijacked. And that's about the worst kind of spyware there is. But if you go to spywareinfo.com,
mm-hmm,
they have a lot of tutorials on what to do. Eventually, I think what you're going to have to do, the only thing you can do short of reformatting and reinstalling Windows, which you may end up having to do anyway, is run a program called Hijack This. It's absolutely free. First thing I would do is I would try SpyBot and Microsoft Defender just to see. Maybe you'll be lucky and they'll get rid of it. If not, then you have to go to Plan B, which is Hijack This. It's not really a removal tool exactly. What it does is it looks at everything that's running on your system. Some of it's legit. Most of it's legit. But a trained eye can look at the list of things running and say, oh yeah, there it is. Get rid of that. And it'll help you get rid of that. So it's a tool that's really more manual removal, but it's often required. Now, if you go to spywareinfo.com, you'll read up on how to use Hijack This. They have an articles. They have a forum. What you'll do is you'll run Hijack This. You'll create a log, and you'll go to the forum, and you'll paste the log, and you'll say, help. And there are people who literally spend all day in there just, you know, because they hate spyware, and they want to be helpful. Helping people figure out what to do next. Once they see the log, they say, well, you got to get rid of this. Here's the... Sometimes Googling, if you know what you've got, Googling it, you'll find manual removal instructions. It's worth trying all of these, but I have to tell you, my experience in now what has almost become years of fighting spyware is it's gotten to the point where sometimes the only thing you can do is reinstall Windows. These things are just nasty. But go to spywareinfo.com. Lots of information there. Read up. Good luck. And for the rest of you, don't get spyware because it's hard to get rid of. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 1:30. Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center. Ba, 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 ba.
Matt Drudge. Ba, tomorrow ba, ba, night, ba, ba, 7 ba, to 10 p.m. KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-KFI is the phone number. I'll be here till 2. And Dr. Dean Adele, I want to see if I can get through as many phone calls as possible between now and then, though. Let's see. Lloyd in San Diego, you've been holding the longest. Hello, Lloyd. Welcome to KFI.
Hi. I have a 4-year-old Dell with Windows ME, and about a month ago, I lost my favorites. They just disappeared. So I called Microsoft. They said it was a problem. They were going to fix it. It would take a day or two. So I waited 3 or 4 days, called them back, still wasn't fixed. And this happened about a month ago. And the last phone call, after about 6 calls, they, in effect, said, don't call us, we'll call you when it's fixed. So my question is there any way that I can get into my computer and get rid of the current? I added some more. I started a new list of favorites. If I go to organize favorites, nothing shows up, so I can't delete anything. So is there any way I can get into favorites in the computer and delete them manually myself? I don't care if Microsoft has, they evidently keep track of that program. I don't know.
I don't think they know what your favorites are, and I don't see how they plan to restore them, but there may be a bug that they know about. The thing is, Windows ME is no longer on their list of supported operating systems. In fact, we just saw a news story that there's a major security flaw in Windows 98 and ME that Microsoft has announced is not going to fix because ME's so old, they don't feel like they have to be responsible for it. So I'm
I'll be going to XP.
Yeah, I'm surprised they even said they would fix it for you. So,
oh yeah, they said it's a problem. They knew the problem existed, and they would.
Well, here's the deal: your favorites are stored in a folder. The favorites actually are in Internet Explorer are just files in a folder. So if you go to your Documents and Settings folder in this on the C drive. And then you go into your login, you know, whatever that is, Lloyd, or whatever it is when you log into the computer.
Right.
You will see a folder in there. It's got a star. It's kind of hard to miss as an icon. It's called Favorites. And that's actually just a folder of files and other folders that are your favorites. They're links to websites.
Okay. We went to that and tried to delete it. And I, there is, as I remember, this was about 2 weeks ago, a block or a... little window that said delete, but it didn't get rid of them. I'm still looking at them.
Yeah. Well, I guess what's happened is that that folder is damaged or corrupted somehow, so that not only are you not able to make changes, but you're not able to access it.
Yeah, I can add to it, but if I go to organize favorites,
they don't show up, though,
delete,
right?
Nothing shows up.
Yeah. So you're adding to it. First of all, You're
which
asking
I've stopped
for
doing. I've got about 30 things.
Yeah,
so.
I think whatever favorites you had are probably gone, unless you see them in
that's
that favorites
right.
folder. Okay, I would say drop Internet Explorer. I tell everybody not to use it. It is a very bad piece of software. It is extremely dangerous to use. It opens a door. Remember our caller Sharon who had Allison who had a spyware infestation.
Yeah,
that's how they get in, is through Internet Explorer. There's a free browser that's far superior. You're not going to have the problem with favorites. It's going to be much more reliable. It actually works better, and it is much less likely to give you get spyware infestations.
What is it?
It's called Firefox. You may have heard of it. You can get it.
Well, I've heard you mention it. Yeah.
Please do yourself a favor. Go to getfirefox.com, download it, and install it. And that'll be the last time you use Internet Explorer. You still need Internet Explorer for, of course, Microsoft's sites. Many of them require Internet Explorer. But very few other sites around the web do, because so many people now are using Firefox.
I'll go to Firefox.
Yeah, you'll be much happier. Getfirefox.com is the website. Not just Firefox.com, but getfirefox.com.
Oh, getfirefox.com.
Right. Yeah, and you'll be so much happier, Lloyd. And then same advice. When you get to XP, retire Internet Explorer. Take the icon off your desktop and use Firefox. You'll be much safer.
I've made note of it.
Good. And I'm afraid I don't know exactly what to do to help you with your Internet Explorer favorites, but by doing this, you'll at least be able to save favorites from now on.
Yeah, well,
one of the things Firefox does when you install it is it does try to, I'm not convinced it'll be able to given the situation with your favorites, but it does try to import your Internet Explorer favorites. It might actually be able to import them, put them in Firefox, and lo and behold, you'll have your favorites, which would be really
nice. Give it a shot.
Good luck, Lloyd.
I'm a computer illiterate, but I love your show.
Thank you. Well, keep listening, because one of the things I really try to do is to give people advice like Firefox that's going to protect them.
Well, I've learned so much.
Thank you, Lloyd. I appreciate
it. Thank you, Leo.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Take care. Let me just mention, since I brought it up, I was going to save it for tomorrow, but it's probably irresponsible of me to save it for tomorrow. I'll put a link in the show notes. Microsoft has announced it will not fix a serious flaw in Windows 98 and Windows Millennium Edition because a patch could break other applications. The security bug relates to Windows Explorer. Now, that's different from Internet Explorer. Windows Explorer, it's kind of the same code, but it's what you use to look at the hard drive. So when you open My Computer, you're opening a Windows Explorer window. It could let an intruder commandeer a vulnerable PC. Now, Microsoft warned about this in April and has fixed it in more recent versions of Windows, including XP 2000 and Windows Server 2003. But Microsoft says it's not feasible to fix it in Windows 98 and ME. To do so, I'm quoting them, would require re-engineering a significant amount of a critical core component of the operating system. After such a re-engineering effort, there would be no assurance that applications designed to run on these platforms would continue to operate. More importantly, let me underscore this, Microsoft doesn't want you using Windows 98 or ME anymore. They've already given people notice. We're not going to support it. We're not going to fix it. You got to buy XP. Microsoft recommends that people who still use the older operating systems, you can almost hear them turning up their nose, can't you? For those of you who still use Windows 98 and ME, oh my goodness. Well, if you must, protect your PC by using a network firewall that filters traffic on TCP port 139. That's actually, to translate, any router will do that. And frankly, any software firewall, but I think a router would be the way to go on that. Such a firewall will block attacks attempting to exploit this vulnerability from outside the firewall. 139 is the Windows file sharing port, by the way, so they've got a problem with file sharing. Microsoft is phasing out support for the older operating systems. They've been providing fixes for only critical flaws for the past couple of years and is ending support altogether next month. So after July 11th, that's the last patch release, July 11th, for Windows XP and ME. And after that, your problems are your problem. Microsoft not going to have anything to do with it. So it probably is time to upgrade. ME was such an awful operating system. That's the other, I don't want to be a snob or anything, Lloyd, but it was never the best version of Windows. It was, frankly, in my opinion, an attempt to extract a few more bucks out of you while Microsoft was trying to get XP out the door. They had 98 SE was doing pretty well. I said, you know, we're not going to be able to get XP out for a couple of years. Can we just do something, you know, a little different? And it was buggy and it was unreliable. And a lot of people upgraded thinking, well, it's the next version. It should be better, and found it was not. It was much worse. It's fine if your computer came with it, you know, that's what it came with, and it'll work. But it was a bad idea. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 147.
When the big stories break, we're on it. KFI News, Fox News.
153 on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Teresa on the line from Burbank. Thanks for your very patient holding time. Sorry to put you through that. Hi, Teresa. Welcome.
Hi. I'm taking a web design class, and it's on a PC using Microsoft Front Page.
Ooh. And how dare they? How dare they claim to be web design teachers? That's appalling. I'm not kidding. Front Page is the worst thing that ever happened to web design.
Okay.
Ooh.
Well, I have a Macintosh at home.
Good.
So I am looking for what type of Macintosh program I should be getting.
You want to be a serious web designer? Is that your goal?
Well, you know, I have four kids. I do a lot of Booster Club stuff. So kind of setting up, you know, Booster Club websites for the kids' programs at school, that sort of thing.
You know, one place to start that's free, and certainly a lot better than Front Page, is Mozilla Composer.
Okay.
It used to be the old Netscape Composer. It's a WYSIWYG web design tool. It does a pretty good job, and it's absolutely free. You can get it from Mozilla.org. It's part of their SeaMonkey distribution. SeaMonkey is the old Mozilla suite, so it's got the browser. It's got all the tools, including Composer.
Okay.
They've continued to work on Composer, and it's become a very good program, and it has the advantage of costing you nothing. The problem with Front Page is it's very proprietary. So what you're outputting, if you look at the HTML, in fact, open it up in the Composer and take a look, it's just a mess. And it requires, you know, it pretty much means you can only use Front Page to work on it.
So I'm not
big on tools like that. I want to see you use an HTML tool that allows you to use other programs. It doesn't tie you into Microsoft's way of doing things. You know, Front Page is very easy. This is probably an extension class. It's not designed for pros.
Right. No, it's a, you know, adult ed class.
Yeah, that's fine then. You know, I mean, Apple's iWeb tool is actually far worse. Far worse.
And what about Dreamweaver?
Now, Dreamweaver is the pro tool. It's what pros use, but it's $400, $300.
Right.
So if and that's why I asked, are you going to be a pro? If you were going to,
at this point, it's not.
Yeah, use Composer. And if you feel the need for more, yeah, Dreamweaver is, I mean, I use Dreamweaver, although I have to say, as time has gone by, I use it less and less, because where web design is headed is away from these statically hand-coded HTML pages and more towards database-driven content management systems where you have an engine using. And in that case, you really, you know, you'll do CSS design, you might do a little HTML, but it's not like it used to be.
Okay.
Nevertheless, Dreamweaver, yes, is the king of all web design tools.
It is.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay,
all right,
thank
Teresa,
you.
Enjoy your class.
Thank you.
You're going to be so much better than they are. You're going to say, I can't, this isn't working. You say, well, yes, of course. You see, the problem is right here in the HTML. Brenda and Hawthorne, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I have a question, please.
Yes.
I make flyers for my church, so I wanted a picture, and they told me to insert the disc, and my computer won't read the disc.
Oh, where'd it come from?
The store. I bought it at Best Buy.
Is it a CD or a floppy disk?
It's a CD.
And it just says, I don't see anything here?
Right. It says, put in the disk and click the picture. And it says, okay, or cancel when you put in the disk. When I put in the disk and I press okay, it acts as if the disk isn't in there.
Yeah.
So I uninstalled it, and now I can't install it back. I did it with another one, but I did not install it.
I think the disc is damaged or scratched or something's wrong.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I just take it back and say, hey, just exchange. And Best Buy, you said Best Buy?
Yeah, but this was a while ago. This was about a year ago.
Well, if you have all the pack, a year ago, they may not. Is it a clip art disc? Is that why there's pictures on it? Or?
Yeah, it's a clip art, and, you know, it's a kind of mixed flyers and birthday cards like that.
Yeah, oh, I got it. So it's like publisher or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just damaged.
So it's not my computer.
No. Other discs work okay?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, discs, these things get scratched. They're not indestructible. You got kids.
I didn't know that.
They could be throwing them around like a Frisbee, you know? You're not alone. It's funny. The first time I was a DJ when CDs came out maybe 15 years ago, and my program director came in and said, "This is the new format. These things are indestructible." And he threw them across the desk, and they scratched up. We could never use them again. So, no, they get scratched. If there's any visible scratches on it, that's probably what happened.
Let me ask you something. You know how in specialty catalogs they advertise, "Oh, we take the scratches out of CDs." Do you recommend something like that?
It only works if it's a very minor scratch, and it only works if it's a scratch on the unprinted side. If there's a scratch on the label side at all, it's destroyed.
This is very good.
Yeah, if it's a light scratch on the plastic side, no, that's fine. You sometimes can buff it out.
Then I'll just purchase some more. I thought I was going to have to
spend
hundreds of dollars.
Oh, gosh, no. And these are cheap programs. They're $20. You know, they're not expensive.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Brenda. Thank you for calling. You're so patient. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Well, you have a good weekend.
You too. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I invite everybody to have a great Saturday afternoon because I'm gonna leave now. On that high note, I have to leave. I'm just too happy. Brenda made me happy. But Dr. Dean Adell's coming up to talk about your health. That'll bring you down. No, he's always fun. And then, of course, from 2 to 4, or rather 3 to 5, it's John and Ken with a fresh show. I will be back tomorrow, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. to talk high tech. My podcasts are online at twit.tv. The radio show site is leo.am. That's where the show notes will live and edited versions of this show and a lot more. And I will see you tomorrow. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio at 159. Jessica Rosenthal is in the KFI News Center.
June 10, 2006.
Well, that's it for this edition of the Tech Guy on KFI. Thanks so much for listening. If you're ever in the Southern California area, I hope you'll listen live on the radio every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFI AM 640. You can also listen on the internet anytime at KFIAM640.com. Archives of older shows are available online on my website. That's leo.am. Click the audio archives button. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, which is leo.am/podcasts/KFI. My thanks to Howard Bailey for providing the theme music for this show. You can listen to Howard's music at soundclick.com. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth. Of course, first of all, thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time on KFI.